Good morning, Tri-Valley. It's Jacob coming to you from my backyard. And the last couple days, I've woken up with some congestion and just some ickiness. I don't feel well, and I thought it would not be good to bring my germs around you guys today. So I'm home. Appreciate your prayers. Hopefully I'll be better in a couple days. But I didn't want to miss out on the last lesson in our series, The Liturgy of the Ordinary. This is a series we've been going through where we've been finding ways of attaching spiritual meaning to some of the everyday, mundane things that we do, like waking up and making your bed, or brushing your teeth, or getting stuck in traffic, or eating leftovers, or getting into a fight with somebody from your family, drinking tea. A lot of these you recognize along the way. We've said if we can attach spiritual meaning to these, then we're worshiping throughout each day and throughout each week and just being reminded of some spiritual truths that are important. And just like we started this series at the beginning of a day, we are ending the series at the end of a day with usually the last thing that you do in your day, which is sleeping. Something that maybe some of you feel like doing right now or weekly whenever I get up to preach. I remember when I first started preaching at Tri-Valley, there were certain people that almost every week would start sleeping as soon as I started preaching. And it was like the same three or four people every week. It wouldn't be kind of me to name names, so I'm not going to do that. Well, I'll name one name, Mick Mao. Mick Mao fell asleep a lot during my sermons. We should quiz him, say, hey, what did Jacob preach on in the time that you were here and he was here? He'd be like, I don't know. I had some of the best naps of my life right there in the church auditorium. That's understandable. Maybe we need more sleep than we're getting. Sleep sometimes is hard for us. Even as adults, we need to learn the rhythms of sleep. We need to discipline ourselves to sleep. I've learned in the course of having five kids that a bedtime routine is actually really, really helpful and necessary. It's a way to get their brains into sleep mode. We're not going to play. We're not going to climb out of our beds. We're going to end our day. We're going to get quiet. We're going to get still, and we're going to rest. And we've always had bedtime routines with our girls. Sometimes it would on bath nights, it would be taking the bath and then brushing our teeth, putting on our pajamas, reading a story, lights off, singing songs, closing the door partway. Good night. We'll see you in the mornings. They learned these rhythms. It taught them how to sleep. There's actually a lot of really important brain stuff that happens while we are sleeping. When we check out for the day and say, all right, we're done. Our brains kind of get to work. Without sleep, you can't form or maintain the pathways in your brain that let you learn and create new memories. It's harder to concentrate and respond quickly. Sleep is important to a number of your brain functions, including how our nerve cells, our neurons, communicate with each other. In fact, your brain and your body stay remarkably active even while you're sleeping. Sleep plays a housekeeping role. It does this thing that removes toxins in your brain that build up while you're awake. Studies show that sleep affects almost every type of tissue and system in your body, from the brain, heart, and lungs to metabolism, immune function, mood, and disease resistance. And studies also show that a chronic lack of sleep or getting poor quality sleep increases the risk of disorders, including high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, depression, and obesity, and on and on and on. So you can tell sleep is a really, really important thing. And some of you might be thinking, I do a great job sleeping. I sleep well at night. I nap during the day. I remember when I was in graduate school, I had this counseling professor, and he said, man, I almost never miss a nap. He's like, I teach all morning. I see clients all afternoon. He's like, the mid part of my day, I always kick my feet up on the desk and I power nap. I eat my lunch and I sleep for 10 or 20 minutes, and it does wonders for my mental health and just being able to meet with people and counsel them over and over again, kind of carry the weight of their emotional needs on his shoulders. He said naps were important. That was part of his rhythm. We heard this story earlier during our communion time about Jesus sleeping in the boat. And it's interesting. I want to read this story again and just point out a couple things, but the trust that Jesus has in God is very significant, and I think it's a trust that we need to learn how to have. Let's read the story again. Mark chapter 4, starting in verse 35. That day when evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side." leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him, and a furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion, and the disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." And then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" And they were terrified, and they asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." Jesus rebukes them for their lack of faith here in the boat, but they're so amazed by his power over the elements, his ability to just kind of groggily wake up and say, what? Oh, peace. Let's not have this squall anymore. This is bugging my friends. Let's just chill this stuff out. They're astonished. They go, "Oh, who is this man?" They're starting to realize that he is the Son of God. But they kind of miss the rebuke. They're so amazed and astonished by Jesus's power that maybe the statement that he makes, "Where is your faith? Why do you have so little faith? Why are you so scared? It's just a storm." And this part of the story always bothered me. Sure, Jesus is teaching them, you should have more faith. You should be able to sleep through a storm like me. But if I were the disciples and I paid attention to that comment, I probably would have clapped back with something like, "Yeah, but you're Jesus. You're special. You have this special connection with the Father. You have the ability to say to a storm that is threatening, just pow, no more." We don't have that. We're not Jesus. You can't expect us to have the kind of faith you have without having the kind of Jesusness, the kind of power that you have. And I wonder what Jesus' response to that would be. Maybe you feel like that. I want to have the faith of Jesus, but I just don't. I can't sleep through a storm. I can barely have a regular rhythm of sleep in my normal life because there's so many things that I need to do. There's so many things that need to be addressed. I got to take care of this. I'm worried about this person. I have all this stuff. It's keeping me up. I get up early so that I can add more hours to my day. It's doing harm to me, but what am I supposed to do? We live in the real world. These are our real lives. We can't be Jesus. And I wonder if Jesus' reply to us would be, "You don't need to be Jesus. You just need to be with Jesus." That seems why he was rebuking the disciples, because of their fear. I think he's wondering, like, haven't you seen and heard enough by now to know that I'm not going to leave you? I'm not going to let things happen to you. When you're with me, things are good. There's a British comedian named James Acaster. One of Molly's favorites. He's this really cerebral, really clever, quick-witted comedian, and he has this bit about ending your day by saying, "No more jobs." He says that's pretty much all life is. It's jobs and then no more jobs. You sleep and you say no more jobs, then you wake up and you do jobs. He's like, all of life is jobs, no more jobs, jobs, no more jobs, and then you die, and that's the ultimate no more jobs. There's nothing left to do at the end of your life. But I wonder how much of us have a hard time saying no more jobs when it's time just to sleep, just to have a moment's rest, just to kind of let go and say, you know what, there's a storm, there's other things that I could be doing, maybe I have fear, maybe I have anxiety, maybe I'm worried about all of these things, but you know what I'm going to do right now? I'm going to do what Jesus did, and I'm just going to let God handle that. Some of you are familiar with one of the shortest verses in the Bible, John 11:35, that says Jesus wept. But this here is a reminder that Jesus slept. That's why we sang Away in a Manger. We see Jesus sleeping in the manger. In Mark 4, we see Jesus sleeping in the boat. And we know where the story goes. In a couple weeks, we'll be celebrating Easter, where we'll acknowledge the fact that Jesus trusted God the Father so much that he laid down his life, and he even laid down for sleep in the tomb and trusted that God had him. God's got this. In the same way that when we sleep, we are trusting that our brain and our bodies are going to do all of those housekeeping tasks that need to get done, clearing away the toxins, creating new neural pathways, working on our physical and mental health. All those things are going to happen automatically, and we trust that when we lay down to sleep at night. I wonder what it will take for us to trust that God has got us when we're not doing anything. When we let go and let God get to work, I wonder how that will improve our life and our faith. There's a quote from this chapter on sleeping in the book that we've been letting be our guide through this series by Tish Harrison Warren, where the author says, she kind of describes our culture and the way things are, the hectic, fast-paced nature of our lives. And I want to read a quote, and I want you to interact with it. I'm going to read this, and then I'm going to ask you to turn to somebody next to you and say, do you agree with her assessment? And then maybe also ask which part of this quote resonates the most with you. She says this, in our workaholic, image-barraged, over-caffeinated, entertainment-addicted, and supercharged culture, submission to our creatureliness is a necessary and often overlooked part of discipleship. And by our creatureliness, she's just talking about knowing our limits and saying, hey, God is God. He works 24 hours. He's at nonstop working in ways that we don't always see. But we have a hard time submitting to our own limits. The fact that we are God's creations, our creatureliness is what she refers to. Let me read this one more time, and then I want you to interact with it. Do you agree with it? And which part resonates the most with you? In our workaholic, image-barraged, over-caffeinated, entertainment-addicted, and supercharged culture, submission to our creatureliness is a necessary and often overlooked part of discipleship. Take 3 or 4 minutes and just talk about that with the people near you right now. Tish Harrison Warren also says this, what if Christians were known as a countercultural community of the well-rested people who embrace our limits with zest and even joy. I love this vision that she casts. What if Christians were not just known for their Christ-likeness, their kindness, their generosity, all those normal things, but what if the one thing that we might be overlooking is being the well-rested people of God, embracing our limits and saying, like Jesus does in the boat, I'm not worried because God's got me. How would that encourage the people around us? How would that make us the people folks would go to when they were in need, when they were in need of prayer, when they wanted a non-anxious presence in their life? I think there's a major opportunity there. There's a classic poem that you might have heard before. It goes, "Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep." Yeah, you've heard this one before. "If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take." You might have heard this. Maybe you had relatives who said this prayer to you growing up. You might know it from Metallica's song, Enter Sandman, the middle part of the song. They recite this classic poem. I haven't recited this poem to my kids during our bedtime routine. I don't think that that's wise. Just like, hey, I'm going to turn the lights off and you may or may not survive. You know, you might die before you wake up. Never know. So good luck. Good night. See you tomorrow. Maybe. I'm not going to do that to my kids. But there's something good about this poem that acknowledges our limits and says, you know what? Every day is a gift. You never know where it's going to go. But whatever happens, I'm going to trust my soul to God. I'm going to entrust my life to Him, to believe that He loves me, He's looking out for me, and ultimately, whatever happens to me in this life, I know where I'm going. I know I have a home in heaven because of Jesus, because of the sacrifice He made on the cross, because He laid Himself down in the empty tomb. But then ultimately, because when they went to go find Jesus' body, it wasn't there, because He was resurrected. He was alive again. So our hope is that God will raise us up like Jesus with Him. Let's pray together. Lord, teach us to trust like Jesus trusts. Thank you for these images of the trusting Jesus who laid down and said, no more jobs. Just, Father, I'm going to let you take it from here. Lord, will you bring peace into our lives by teaching us how to rest in a way that is Christ-like? I pray this for my friends. I pray this for myself. I pray that we can live out that vision to be the well-rested people of God who shine the light of Jesus into this world. I pray this in His holy name. Amen.